Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight Jack Benny does another television show. But meanwhile, let's go out to Jack's home in Beverly Hills, where, even as you and I, Rochester is filling out his income tax.
Let's see. Name? Rochester Van Jones. Occupation? Butler, chauffeur, cook, gardener, valet, masseur, window washer, and author of What to Do in Your Spare Time. Now, let's see. Enter your total wages.
Hello, Rochester. What are you doing?
I'm filling out my income tax, Mr. Benny. It certainly is complicated.
Well, I'll help you with it if you'd like.
I sure would.
All right, let's see the form. Oh, Rochester, look at all the occupations you listed. You don't work that hard.
I don't, eh?
No.
I got housemaid's knee clear up to the hip.
What?
And at that point, middle-aged spread takes over.
Rochester, if you want me to help you, pay attention. Now, let's see, your income. What was your income last year?
Do I have to tell?
Certainly. Put down the salary I pay you.
Can I write in red ink?
Red ink, why?
I want them to know I'm blushing.
Never mind. Now for the next question. List any extra monies you received as gratuities, gifts, or bonuses from your employer.
Oh, boss, come now.
Look, Rochester, just finish your income tax, sign it, and mail it in. Look, and I'm going down to my vault to get some money. I owe Frankie Remley $10.
What for?
Oh, it was a silly thing. I bet him that he couldn't go a whole day without taking a drink of liquor.
And he won?
Yeah. Just my luck. He sat on a rusty nail and got lockjaw. I'll be back in a few minutes, Rochester. Gee, it's dark in here. Here come my alligator. Yeah, I don't see Irving. He was sick last week. I hope that veterinarian I sent down made him feel better. Oh, there he is. Hi, Irving. Gee, he's fatter than ever. Come to think of it, I remember the veterinarian going down, but I don't remember him coming up. Oh, well, if I get a bill, I'll know he's all right. Well, here's the vault. There, friend or foe?
Friend.
What's the password?
You can take it with you.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Benny.
Yeah, because how are you feeling, Ed?
Oh, I'm fine today, but yesterday I had a terrible fright.
Really?
Yes, it was just awful. I woke up and I couldn't see a thing.
Gee, what'd you do?
I cut my hair.
Well, I need some money, Ed. I'll have to open the safe. Let's see. The combination is right to 45, left to 60, back to 15, then left to 110. There. Say, Ed, did the alarm sound a little weaker than usual?
I'll tell you in a minute. I'm counting the dead gophers.
Well, let's see. Here's a $10 bill. That'll take care of Remley. I'm taking Mary to Romanoff for dinner tomorrow, so I better take another $5. Yeah, I'll take $6. I might want dinner, too. Well, I better be going. So long, Ed.
Goodbye, Mr. Benny. Drop me a postcard now and then. Sometimes it gets lonesome.
Yeah. Say, Ed, how long have you been down here?
Oh, it's been years and years. I guess I sort of lost track.
Well...
But we can figure it out. Remember the day you brought me down here? It was your birthday. You were 38.
Gee, it's been that long. Well, Ed, you can't stay down here forever. Have you ever thought of going up?
Yes, I have. When my time comes and Gabriel blows...
No. Not that far up. Just upstairs.
Upstairs? Oh, Mr. Benny, you're teasing me.
No, I'm not. See, you've been down here for years and years and years and... Just for a little vacation, Ed. I'm going to take you up with me right now. Now, let's go, Ed. Now, follow me.
All right.
Be careful. Ed, what happened?
You forgot to unchain me.
Oh. There we are. Now, let's go. Right up the steps here. Are you coming, Ed?
Yeah, but I'm getting dizzy. I hope my nose doesn't bleed.
Oh, you'll be all right. Well, here we are, Ed. This is the library.
Hey, it... Ooh.
What's the matter?
Something hurts my eyes.
Oh, you'll get used to it. It's the light from this lamp here.
Lamp?
Yes, you see, all the light comes from this little bulb. You see, it's filled with electricity.
Oh. Is Ben still flying that kite?
No, you don't understand, Ed. I'll explain it to you later. Right now, I want you to meet Rochester. Oh, Rochester!
Coming!
Now, Rochester, Ed may be hungry. Take him in the kitchen and show him the refrigerator.
Refrigerator?
That's something new, Ed.
Oh, I don't care. If I like it, I'll eat it.
Ed, you don't eat the refrigerator. You eat the things inside, you see. It's a place to store things like ham, cheese, steaks, caviar, and turkey.
Oh, is that what it's for?
Rochester.
You learn something new every day.
Don't be funny. You're only confusing Ed. And it's hard enough to explain. I'll get the door. You take Ed in the kitchen and get him something to eat.
Well, I wanted to start out the show here on Christmas Eve with a little levity. I love comedy, and the more slapstick it is, the better I like it. All you young guys out there, you won't remember Jack Benny. He's a Jew, but he was pretty popular in the 30s, 40s, and into the 50s. He went from radio and then on to TV. And he did this thing once a year because, you see, he had a rep of being cheap. I wonder why. Being cheap as hell. Everything was about money with him. And so he had this... safe down under his house in a cave, and he had a moat, and he had alligators in the water around the moat, in the moat. And he had this caretaker down there, stayed down there in the dark dungeon and next to his safe, guarding it all year long. And once a year, he'd go down to check his money. Now, this is very symbolic here. Benny the Jew, and then Rochester, his black servant, who he had with him on most of his shows for years and years. But you could see the master-slave relationship between them. But they made it funny. But there was a hell of a lot of truth to these skits on here. You know, like he's going to take his wife to Romanoff's restaurant, which is a very expensive restaurant. He's going to take her for $5. Then he says, well, maybe $6. I might want to eat. So, anyhow, now there's another one. I don't want you to, you can go on now and you're going to be shocked. If you want to find out about what's going on in Israel, in their Israeli news, which is quite revealing, quite revealing. And that they've got a channel on now on the internet or on the web. It's jltv.com. Now, I also discovered on there another funny Jew I used to listen to years and years ago, Soupy Sales. And he was a funny Jew. The show allegedly was for kids, but it became hilariously popular among college students and so forth. So they brought back Soupy Sales, who's another Jew. But anyhow, you might want to try him out. He's usually on at 9:30 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. Anyhow, but they do have a lot of stuff on that channel that's total junk, and they have a lot of stuff on there that you might need to know if you're going to spy on the Jews. Hey, this is Terrible Tommy, White Aryan Resistance, December 24th, 2014, Wotan's Day, David Lane's favorite day. Okay, now I had a couple of things I was going to say. I don't know whether you know about it, but Jesse Ventura sued this guy, and don't have his name written down here, that they're making this new movie off of. It's opening this weekend on this America's Greatest Sharpshooter Killer. And I guess he was in the Marines. And they're going to make big trumpeting about this guy. I'm not going to go to see it. And I'll tell you why I'm not going to go see it. It's because he was shooting people from a mile or better away over there in the Middle East. Now, the problem is we need those kind of sharpshooters cleaning out the corruption in this country. To me, he was just a paid assassin, a very good assassin, but assassin no less, shooting the heads off of people over there in the Middle East that were just trying to defend their homes and so forth, and had legitimacy to have their own government and all that. But he's over there as a hired killer. He said some disparaging things about Jesse, and Jesse sued him, and he got a $1.8 million judgment against the guy. They're appealing it now, but I hope Jesse gets that money, and has a good time, because I have respect for him, and I don't have any respect for the other guy because he was a hired killer. If he'd do it in this country and they caught him, they'd give him the chair or a needle in the arm. So all this stuff of sending people over to countries where we don't belong, not our countries, and training them to be killers is not my style. Now, like I say, if we had guys like that in this country cleaning out corruption, that's a different story. They'd be my heroes. Okay. Well, I've got to go back here in the dungeon, back where Igor hangs out, and see if I can find a Sling Blade show. Here I go. If I'm not back in 5 minutes, call the Klan, okay? Well, we'll get back through here. And get on back here. There it is. Okay. We got a show. It's got cobwebs all over it. I saw a big spider on it, but we've got it, man. We got it. Here we go. Sling Blade on the night before Christmas. Now, some of these shows do have dates on them. Now, this one's Outlaws and Rebels, and this was aired on 7th month of 2010, July 2010. So, anyhow, Ghost Wolf, here we go.
It's July 7th, 3 days after the 4th of July, which has become a commercial lie. This country's going to hell in a handbasket, but I don't need to tell you guys that, do I? You guys are probably more aware than anybody. But I've come to the conclusion lately that Tom Metzger definitely has a few pieces of the puzzle. But I've also recognized that Ralph Epperson has a piece of the puzzle. What's that guy's name? Rousseau. His name escapes me right now. He died in 2007. He's the guy that Nicholas Rockefeller reached out to because he liked his movies or whatever. And this Rousseau guy terminated the relationship with him. I think he was named Kevin Rousseau. I'm not sure. Terminated the relationship with Nicholas Rockefeller because he just said, this guy's fucked up. I mean, just the shit that these guys are up to and what they're doing and how they're just hurting people worldwide. You know, just another story behind that. So, he had a piece of the puzzle. Whether you like it or not, Alex Jones has a piece of the puzzle. You know, some of us don't like his big mouth antics, but there's a lot of things he's telling the truth about. Michael Tesarian, T-S-A-R-I-O-N. You may have adverse feelings about him, but he's definitely right on track when it comes to the architects of control. So, a lot of dissent out there. I hope it gets bigger and bigger. But like I said before on numerous occasions, our enemy is always evolving. I'm going to be gleaning some things out of a book called The Handbook for Rebels and Outlaws, written by Mark Mirabello. It's kind of a, not really a Might is Right type of book, but he really gleans from things that are really obscure. You can tell he's a real big fan of Marcus de Sade, who's a Frenchman who was either, I don't know, a Satanist or an anarchist. I don't know what he is, but the guy is pretty foul. You know. I mean, don't get me wrong. De Sade said some things that I agree with. I would definitely not hold him up to being some kind of paragon of rebellion. Not my type of rebellion anyways. So, let's start out with nine maxims for the rebel, or in our case, nine maxims for the ghost wolf, lone wolf. Number one, understand that no one can give you freedom. Freedom is a treasure that must be stolen. Absolutely right. You have no rights. If you want something in this world, if you want to see the survival of the white race, if you want to keep from being fleeced by the government, you can't just sit on your ass and hope that maybe in the next life you'll get your reward. Personally, I wish that was true. I just can't put faith in that now, you know. I'm not saying I'm a full-blown atheist, but I'm definitely an agnostic. Don't see a whole lot of good in this world. Number two, do not believe anything until it has been officially denied. Number three, remember the words of Frederick the Great of Prussia. He who defends everything defends nothing. What's he talking about there? Compromise? I can use that in a guerrilla tactic against the system. The system tries to defend everything. But as they keep making advances in technology that can track us. We have a certain window of opportunity to bring about a revolution. And I'm not sure if a lot of people want that. But you know what? I'm getting the feeling that maybe there's people out there that want it who have no idea what resist.com is. So maybe scrawl on the walls of bathroom stalls, www.resist.com. Number four, remember Aleister Crowley's warnings. Your friend can do more harm than a stranger. And the greatest danger lies in your own habits. I totally agree with that. Now, I remember contacting Tom Metzger a couple years ago. I told him that he should vary his times going to his post office box to pick up mail. And he should dress in a different tire sometimes, you know. But there's bigger fish out there for the enemies of our movement to go after. You know, Tom Metzger is a rebel within a rebellion movement. So we got maybe 1% of 1% of the white racial struggle. You know, and I used to look down on that, you know, and until I co-hosted a show with Metzger maybe a couple months ago. You know, I talked about the guys who want to go out there and protest and this and that. And he says, good, let them keep doing that. You know, the ZOG will keep their eye on them and not on people who are really up to no good or up to revolutionary tactics. And after he said that, I really started to see things differently. So, number five, keep plans simple. Do not make unnecessary risk. Trust only what you control. Number six, follow the wisdom of Sun Tzu and always provide the enemy with an escape route. When surrounded, even a rodent will fight ferociously. Yeah, okay. If you must die fighting, have an audience. That is number nine. What the hell am I doing? I skipped number seven. All right, number seven. Know that when you fight alone and on foot, you are the most difficult target to locate on the battlefield. Your intelligence makes you the stealthiest of all weapons. I couldn't agree with that more. When you fight alone and on foot, you're the most stealthful of all weapons. Definitely. Your car can be traced back to you. That's why I always said if you have to rely on your own transportation to get somewhere, it should be a nondescript car, preferably black, silver, or white, which are the most ubiquitous colors on the road. Don't have bumper stickers on your car. Your car shouldn't stand out at all. In fact, all your taillights and headlights and everything must be in working order. There should be no reason for a cop to pull you over. And when you park your car to do your thing, it needs to be nowhere near where you do your thing, whatever that is. Maybe it's just posting literature against a future foreign occupation of this country. You don't think it's coming? You better think again. All right, number eight. If you die fighting, have an audience. That's kind of cool, I guess. And number nine, never forget that dupes believe, slaves fear, and rebels, or in our case, ghost wolves, defy. Now, the things that's in this book are in alphabetical order. Now, I'm going to be picking up in the letter C, because I need to reread the ones that fell under letter A and B, because I didn't highlight any of them. But I hope you guys can find some of this stuff useful, informative. So, here we go. Starting off in C, it says cache. That's C-A-C-H-E. Cache, cache, depending on what part of the world you're from, how you pronounce that. A prudent person will have a supply dump or cache containing perhaps weapons, some money, and an emergency knapsack. The knapsack, or pack, I like to call it. A second one should be kept in your home. should contain a miniature flashlight with extra batteries, a small compass, a map, waterproof matches, disposable lighter, dry lint. Lint lights and burns easily. A large knife, large plastic trash bags for emergency shelter and camouflage, a space blanket made of aluminum and mylar, a metallic container to cook, collect water, and signal with, women's nylon stockings. These are multi-purpose. They can be used to catch fish, filter water, scrub surfaces, and store things. 2 quarts of water. Note that water weighs 60 pounds per square foot. All right. That's why you need to know how to, get water if you run out. One method is to dig a hole, a 2-foot deep hole, maybe 3 feet. Fill the bottom of it with vegetation, like leaves from a tree, a good deal amount. Put your, some kind of metal container or plastic container that's not, make sure it's sterilized or clean, as clean as you can get it. Put over the hole, put a piece of plastic that covers the hole completely and overlaps the hole by at least anywhere from 6 inches to a foot, and hold it over the hole with rocks. But make sure that there's a more or less a concave shape to the plastic, meaning you don't want it to be stretched over the hole tautly. You want it to cave in a little bit, and you want the point of that concave to be over your plastic container. A good way to do that is set a rock in the very center of the plastic. So all the condensation that builds up underneath that plastic, piece of plastic you have, preferably clear plastic works, I think, better because the sunlight can heat up the vegetation. And the water that collects on the underside of the plastic will drip into your container because you placed a rock, not a heavy rock, just a stone in the center of the plastic, and then weighed the plastic down, the part of the plastic overlaps the hole with rocks in all four corners or so. I hope you guys understand what I mean by that. Okay, dried food, high energy food, like energy bars, I guess, money, soft earplugs to sleep in a battle zone. I don't know about that. I don't know about having earplugs in when you're on the run. I mean, you want to be able to hear a sound that doesn't belong. If you're on the run, you're out in a wooded area somewhere, and you hear metal on metal in the middle of the night, chances are you got enemy approaching your area. That's one of the sounds I look for. A heavy footfall, something that, it sounds different when a man walks through a wooded area than an animal. An animal you'll barely hear. You may hear rustling and this and that because some animals hunt at night, like rodents or whatever. Raccoons. But a heavy footfall will snap twigs. That's what we get for being civilized. We've lost a lot of our stealth techniques. But if I hear metal on metal, man, I want to be able to hear that. So I don't know if I agree with this earplugs thing. By the time you need an emergency cache, it is too late to start one. Plan now before it's too late. Opportunities from calamities. Calamities properly exploited can be sources of wealth. Interestingly, in the Chinese language, the word for crisis is represented by 2 pictographs. One is defined as danger, and the other one means opportunity. Yeah, that's nice. Natural disasters, for example, are excellent times for looting, and during war and civil unrest, fortunes can be made from the black market. And when there is a complete breakdown of law and order, such as in a civil war, the member of the subproletariat, subproletariat is the criminal class, that's what he means by that, can thrive without the artificial constraints imposed upon him by military or police. He may kill men who have once humiliated him, possess women who once rejected him, and seize wealth that was once beyond his reach. Indeed, because members of the subproletariat have little education and no legal earning power, they really have no stake at all in social stability. Since they possess no skills marketable in normal times, for them the end of chaos means the end of good times. Interesting. Now, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but preparing for bad stuff happening, that definitely needs to happen. Okay, under clandestine communications, there's a bunch of stuff here, but one that really stood out for me is this one. In today's world, a dead drop may be an email account. An operative accesses the account, writes a message, but does not send it. A second operative, who also has the password, accesses the account, reads the draft message, and then deletes it. Since the message never travels over the internet, it cannot be intercepted. I thought that was a very cool tactic. I don't know how Lone Wolf Computer Man or Lone Wolf Wall Street feels about that. I hope they hear this message. Maybe they can chime in on that. For example, let's say my email address, blackhoodedsaxon@gmail.com. Let's say I initiate that account, and somehow I get it to whoever needs it. I give him also the password. I write a message, but I save it in the draft. I don't send it. He accesses the account from maybe another part of the country. He knows the password, reads the message, and then all is well. They have a form here. They have something here called clandestine communication in a prison. And they have a thing called the Siberian Square. And within the prison itself, inmates in solitary confinement used a knuckle voice invented in Russia by a nihilist doctor. Prisoners tap out messages based on the so-called Siberian Square. A is one space one and two short raps. You would have to look at this to know exactly what he's talking about, but if you want to get this book, it's called Handbooks for Rebels and Outlaws by Mark Mirabello. In the North Vietnamese prisoner of war camp, an American pilot who was forced to utter propaganda on film cleverly used his eyelids to say torture in Morse code. Very cool. In West German prisons, imprisoned members of the Bader-Meinhof gang, I think I've done some shows on them, communicated with one another through their lawyers, because lawyers have the, confidentiality, you know. That's cool. According to Ralph Epperson, the author of The Unseen Hand, an introduction into the conspiratorial view of history, the first task of a conspiracy is to convince people that the conspiracy itself does not exist. Well, we know that. Right? We're aware of little shenanigans that the CFR and the rest of the New World people live by. There's one here on crime, a parable on crime. Consider this riddle. Two men meet to play a game. One has all kinds of advantages. In society, there's the rich man. And one has all kinds of disadvantages. In society, this is the poor man. Probably every one of you out there listening to this. Should the latter follow the rules of the game and lose? In real life, this is the honest poor man. Or should he break the rules and possibly win? In real life, this is the criminal. Or in our case, a revolutionary. In every organized society, the riddle and parable, and the parable applies. Yep. Do not live by someone else's rules. Be a law unto yourself. Now, I'm not condoning being a serial killer. White women of childbearing age are under 2% of the world's population. So, I definitely do not condone the killing of white women. If they're with a black man, well, just teach him a lesson. We may need him alive. Oh, are you kidding me? I wouldn't go near that after it's been with a black man. Well, if we want to keep our race alive, we may have no choice but to take what's there, you know. And you guys out there, you white men who have women, treat them like gold. All right, Aleister Crowley, still in the seas here. An author, occultist, mountain climber, drug user, and satire. Aleister Crowley had been called the avatar of the Antichrist. Crowley taught that the era of the tyrant gods, the gods who demand objection and obedience, has come to an end. The new era, he declared, was in the power of the Lord of Freedom. Crowley declared in the private letter, I want blasphemy, murder, and rape, revolution, everything good and bad, but strong. Well, I don't want rape. I don't know. Just really not keen on rape. A rebel by nature, Crowley made this declaration. The dead dog floats with the stream. In Puritan France, the best women are harlots. In vicious England, the best women are virgins. I outlined something here about Gabriella D'Annunzio, who lived 1863 to 1938. And this guy was a bad dude. D'Annunzio, who viewed himself as a poet and a warrior, part Dante and part Caesar, as a writer and a man of action. D'Annunzio was a decadent, a poet, a novelist, a dramatist, an artist, a musician, an aesthetic, a womanizer, a genius, and a cad. An eccentric, the one-eyed D'Annunzio served guests wine from the skull of a virgin he had allegedly driven to suicide. Bunch of other stuff about this guy. The proper time of death. Now we're in the D's. Because of the uniformity which prevails in all that has been and all that will be, a man who is 40 years old has experienced a gamut of human experience, including love, hate, beauty, ugliness, fear, and is deprived nothing by death. Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor and philosopher, said that. Interesting piece here. Eugene Debs, who was the founder of the American Socialist Society, died in 1926, said a nonviolent rebel. Eugene Debs was a candidate for the office of presidency of the United States 6 times as a Socialist Party candidate. He received 6% of the popular vote in 1912. Debs opposed the entry of the United States into World War I. For his stand, Debs was sentenced to 10 years in prison and had his citizenship revoked. He ran for the presidency from the Atlanta Penitentiary in 1920. Although behind bars, Debs received 3.5% of the vote. His sentence was commuted by Warren Harding, but he was disenfranchised for life. Well, I guess that would do it, you know. Under deception, according to Niccolo Machiavelli, it says, although in other affairs it is hateful to use fraud, in the operations of war it is praiseworthy and glorious. And another Italian by the name of Francesco Gucciardini, deception is very useful, whereas your frankness tends to profit others rather than you. Well said. Deception by Sun Tzu. According to Sun Tzu, all warfare is based on deception. Therefore, when capable, feign incapacity. When active, inactivity. When near, make it appear that you are far away. When far away, that you are near. Offer the enemy a bait to lure him. Feign disorder and then strike him. When he concentrates, prepare against him. When he is strong, avoid him. That's sound guerrilla tactics there. Anger his generals and confuse him. Pretend inferiority and encourage his arrogance. Keep him under a strain and wear him down. When he is united, divide him. Attack where he is unprepared and sally out where he does not expect you. Deceptions of technique. Oh, sorry. Techniques of deception. I have that. What do you call that? Where you right and left are. Was that dyslexic? I'm not sure. All right. The unintentional mistake. Convince the enemy that valuable information has come into his hands and through a security problem or negligence. In World War II, the Allies planted false invasion plans on a corpse in an incident referred to as the man who never was. Here's another technique of deception. The technique of acclimatization by slow change. This technique is based on the fact that evolutionary change is less noticeable than revolutionary change. Well, that's what's happening to us now. I mean, you guys see that, right? I mean, all right. We supposedly defeat Hitler and fascism in 1945. Okay, so therefore, the master race and the concept of the master race is gone. 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education. And then 1957, wasn't that the Little Rock, Arkansas thing? I'm not sure. But, you know, then it snowballed into the civil rights thing over here. It is a gradual progression for them, not for us, of one worldism. Interesting, you know we're on to something when you have the conservatives and those on the right in Fox News deplore racism, and you turn on MSNBC or some other leftist scum. And when I say leftist, I don't mean it. I mean, we have leftist views as far as working class stuff. But let's call them race-mixing scum. There you go. They deplore racism, too. So obviously, racial harmony plays into their game. I'm sure the CFR, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission love racial tolerance. They don't want racial unrest, even though they can make money off of that too. I mean, the United States government made huge amounts of money off of the butchery and the genocide of the people of East Timor. That happened under Carter. Started to happen a little bit under Nixon. I believe Ford and Kissinger met with Suharto, the guy who was in charge of Indonesia back in the early 70s. Right after they got on a plane, Ford and Kissinger, they invaded East Timor and just started killing everybody, raping the women and doing whatever. We made huge amounts of money off of that because of arms shipments. We bombed Kosovo, or we bombed Serbia. And it's coming out now, well, you know, it's not really a known fact, but it's true that when we started bombing Serbia and Belgrade and parts of Kosovo, that actually increased the atrocities. You know, I read a book by Gore Vidal, Dreaming War, and I don't know how you feel about Gore Vidal. I mean, he's not a racialist, but what a great freaking author. Now, he was a soldier in the Pacific during World War II. And in 1945, Japan wanted to surrender to the United States prior to the dropping of the bombs. But they told the American people that, oh, Japan, we'll lose a million men if we invade Japan to take out the emperor and this and that. That's not true. Japan was ready to surrender. But Truman wanted those bombs dropped to scare the Russians, to bring about the Cold War. And what was the result of the Cold War? The military-industrial complex making trillions and trillions of dollars over the last 40, 50 years. Think about it. The United States had 525,000 troops deployed in Vietnam in the late 60s. We had civil unrest. We had racial unrest. The country was coming apart at the seams. Why didn't the Russians invade? They didn't invade because the same shell game going on here was going on over there. The same people are in charge. Rockefeller Standard Oil sold the German Luftwaffe a certain oil additive that their planes depended on. Thiessen, or Thiessen, however you say his name, the guy who pretty much seduced Hitler into national capitalism and abandoned national socialism at the Night of the Long Knives, Thiessen had $3 million of his own personal money in a New York bank. And you guys out there, don't even cop an attitude when Tom Metzger requests money. Okay, you cannot have a revolution without money. Jakob Schiff, a Jew-American banker, made sure that $20 million was funneled into Lenin for the Russian Revolution. You need money for a revolution. You cannot do it without money. Money buys resources. Money buys arms and ammunition. Guess who has arms and ammunition out the wazoo? The black gangs, who I have to say are probably more heavily armed. I would probably say let's just take one gang here in Chicago. Chicago. Let's say, what's left of the Gangster Disciples? I'll bet you any amount of money they're more armed than the Klan down in Kentucky. No doubt about it. So, the technique of acclimatization by slow change has definitely been going on in this country. So let's read what this technique says. Change is less noticeable than revolutionary change. It's well known that a toad dropped into a boiling water will jump out. A toad placed in a room temperature water will stay in the water until death. However, if the temperature is slowly raised, it is interesting. If you raise this temperature slowly, it'll actually boil and he won't move at all. That's the white people of America right there. It's interesting that when the USA introduced the modern income tax in 1914, the annual income tax per capita was 28 cents. Rates have been raised slowly without incident ever since. You see, we drifted off the track decades ago. And it wasn't noticeable back then because we were only a couple inches off the track. Now we're miles away from the track. And this so-called train, to use the analogy of a train, of the United States of America, is headed towards the abyss. And I don't say that for shock and effect. I mean, there's just all kind of things going on out there. You know, I was thinking about something yesterday. In 1951, I don't know if I discussed this with you guys. Maybe I talked about what Metzger on a co-host show I did with him. I'm not sure. But since I don't really remember, I'm going to repeat it. Metzger, I was telling him that in 1951, the town within my area called Cicero, Illinois, which was a 1951, I mean, it was almost exclusively white, close to 100% white. There were definitely no blacks in Cicero. Well, the blacks wanted to move into Cicero in 1951. There was such a massive riot that the Illinois National Guard had to come in and restore order. It took 3 days. for them to restore order. These white people went fucking ballistic. No way are blacks moving in here. Look at 1966 when they tried to march to, when they, Martin Luther King did march through Gage Park. He was hit in the head with a brick. Got his ass out of there. Look at white people now. Can you really blame all that on television? I don't think so. I think, yeah, there has been some inculcation of passivity in the white people over the last 40 years of Jewish-controlled television. Definitely. But I truly believe since they've decoded the Genome Project that somehow, some way, there's chemicals in our food. Maybe it's the chemtrails in the sky that's doing this to us. It's making us passive. We have absolutely no hope anymore. Most white people, they've just given up hope. They don't fight for anything anymore. Oh, they'll fight for their favorite team. You know. Boy, we're in bad shape. So what are we going to do about it? You know, there's a humidifier, a dehumidifier on the market. I don't know the name of it. But it takes water out of the air. Since there is speculation that there are chemicals in our water to pacify us and then maybe sterilize us over the next few generations. I definitely believe that there's chemicals in us that to pacify us. Remember, they did the Germans, the Nazi Party, the Nazi scientists made massive headway into study of genealogies and genes and biology and stuff like that. And the science today is really built upon the headway that the Nazis made under the Third Reich. And since they have the Genome Project decoded, they got to know what affects white DNA that doesn't have the same effect on black, brown, or yellow DNA. Now, I'm not a biologist. That's only speculation, but I'm pretty convinced of that. If I'm wrong, show me. I'm from Missouri. Fucking show me. We've become so passive, though. But this dehumidifier actually takes water out of the air, and it can give you 7 gallons of water a day. That's pure water. No chemicals, nothing. No fluoride, none of that stuff. You know, there's a scientist that, during the Vietnam War, who worked on, who did battlefield operations on American soldiers in their 20s and Vietnamese soldiers in their 50s. And noticed that we had more hardening of the arteries and plaque buildup in our arteries and lungs than they did at Vietnamese men in their 50s. And it's been linked actually to the fluoride in our water. So, take it for what it's worth. Now listen to this. This is under the title of Defeat. Now, use the example of the USSR was facing defeat in 1941 and counterattacked and ultimately won. And, you know, I don't really like to dwell on fratricidal wars amongst the white race. But at the end of this paragraph it says, clearly defeat is a state of mind. In war, defeat depends on people's accepting of the political mythology of defeat. There's nothing wrong with running away to live to fight another day. That's a good gorilla right there. The death of democracy, it says here, according to Alexander Fraser Tyler, a British contemporary of George Washington, a democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It can exist only until the voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse, defined as a liberal gift, out of the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always to be followed by a dictatorship. according to John Adams, a former American president. Remember, democracies never last long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. There never was a democracy yet that did not commit suicide. It's funny, I can hear the death rattle in the throat of Western civilization now. I really can. Under the Marcus de Sade, says that he believed that the most perfect thing is one whose activity causes the most change. Although Marquis de Sade, dedicated his imagination to life, liberty, and the pursuit of beauty, he spent 27 of the 74 years in prisons and asylums, enduring loathsome conditions. Rats and mice scurried over him when he tried to sleep at night. De Sade nevertheless managed to write his books, including one called 120 Days of Sodom, and a single roll of paper 12 meters long. I don't know if I'm willing to accept him as one of example. Ragnar Redbeard, definitely. According to Dillinger, we only rob from the banks, and what the banks rob from the people. I like that. Robin Hood. Okay. Discrediting sources. According to the author of The Unseen Hand, never try to refute the accusations, but always destroy the accuser. I don't know if that would work for us. Under techniques of disguise, there is one here. There's like six of them, but one of them I'll read. Says, make your skin darker with commercial tanning lotions or canlaxanthin or something like that. Canthaxanthin. A coloring agent taken orally. You know, I wouldn't do that, man. That could mess up your insides. Use makeup and creams designed for black women to darken your skin. Skin may be made lighter with bleach. All right, we don't need to make our skin lighter. Okay. Disinformation, a kind of propaganda, involves the perversion of truth. The function of disinformation is to discredit or mislead the enemy. Some noted examples of disinformation include, during the First World War, Phyllis Campbell, a British nurse, wrote Back to the Front, a work of Allied disinformation that circulated widely. Describing German atrocities against women and children. Yeah, some of these atrocities are still believed today. Germans stabbing Belgian babies and crap like that. It's all bullshit. Campbell claimed that she saw the young women with her breasts cut off holding a dead baby. Whatever. Lies. Lies and more lies. They're using those techniques against us. Destruction of documents. To effectively destroy documents, place them in an electric blender with water. Modern shredding machines are not reliable, and shredding papers can be reassembled. When the Iranians seized the American embassy in Tehran in 1979, the Iranians used carpet weavers to painstakingly reconstruct the documents shredded by the CIA. Well, they got better shredders out there now, but you don't have a shredder. A blender with some water will do. Okay. Combat with dogs. If a dog attacks, throw a stone at the breast. A dog which lacks intelligence will bite the stone that strikes him and not the man who threw it. I don't mean to laugh, but one time on Versus, I saw this big game hunter shoot this lion in the back, and the lion just went freaking ballistic trying to bite whatever was attacking his back, not realizing that he'd been shot. So, if the stone fails, know that the dog will go for an arm or a leg. If you wrap your jacket around your arm, a dog will bite and hang on tenaciously. Be careful, however, guard dogs are trained to attack the throat or the groin. Also remember that rabies is committed through saliva. It is not necessary to be bitten. Dog's skeletal system gives them a form of armor plating, but his soft spots are his abdomen, the area under the chin, and a region above the breastbone. If grappling with a dog, fall on the animal and break its leg joint. You know what I would do, definitely. I would definitely wrap my arm up with a towel or something, let him bite the arm, lift up a little bit, and then stab underneath him into his throat or underneath his, you know, underneath his jaw. Definitely. Because I'm not going to let some nigger's pit bull tear me up. You know, they have a tendency to leave their dogs off the leash. Okay, under Felix Dzerzhinsky, one of the most ingenious and sinister operations, Felix Dzerzhinsky created the Trust, which appeared to be an anti-communist organization. In reality, its function was to lure enemies of the revolution to their deaths. Remember what I said on a Ghostwolf show last year sometime? I read how these British agents or whatever use these African troops, have these African troops, I guess this happened in the Congo or whatever, have them pose as other guerrilla forces. And they would join other guerrilla forces, only to kill them in their sleep at night or whatever. Or use them to track or help the English track them. So there is that. Speaking of fugitives here, we're now in the F's. Fugitives and dogs. Okay. To evade dogs, know their abilities and shortcomings. Dogs see in monochrome, whatever that means. They have difficulty seeing over long distances, but they see movement. Their hearing and smell are acute. These conditions help dogs track their prey. Dense grass, wet ground, high humidity, light wind, rain or fog, still water like a marsh, and a person's excessive perspiration. These things hinder a dog's scent. Bad weather, high winds, snow, ice, or heavy rain. Dry or dusty areas, sparse vegetation, hard surfaces like roads, rock or sand, and areas contaminated with chemicals like oil, synthetic fertilizers in a field, and so forth. To evade a dog, rub a heavy, obnoxious scent such as ammonia or turpentine on the soles of your shoes. Also, go in and out of streams and running water to create a false trail. Carry tacks and throw them on the trail or in short grass. These tacks are dipped in nicotine. The dog that steps on them will be disabled within minutes. Dipped in nicotine, huh? Well, how do you get nicotine? Because you take a bunch of cigarette butts and you, a bunch of cigarette butts and let them soak in water. And then drain the water and then maybe boil the water down to get it more concentrated. So, you know, that might work. Okay, rules for fugitives. You know what? I don't know if I have time for this. I'll save the rest of the F's for side B of this show, of this tape, actually. Let's see, I have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 tapes. That's 20 shows. So we'll see what happens after that. So I want you guys to support Metzger. Revolutionary movements cannot happen without money. So I know that sounds bad, but that's just the way it is. Hope you guys are reading stuff out there that's going to help you in your activism. I hope that you are getting in the best shape that you can possibly get in. I hope you are seeking training in all types of armed and disarmed combat. Don't be like me and train for a few years and then get sidelined by injuries. Okay, so especially you young guys, I got late in the martial arts at a late age. I started training when I was 36. If you guys are in your 20s now, stop putting it off and get to it now. Like I said before, stay away from Taekwondo and stuff like that, Hapkido. You need years and years to make that stuff effective. Instead, get into a martial art that you could be effective within a month. Jeet Kune Do is my favorite. I trained in Jeet Kune Do for a few years. I trained in Kempo for a few years. You can also include in there Krav Maga. Yeah, I know. The training center is probably run by a Jew. So what? You're undercover anyways. You're behind enemy lines. Okay? Ghost Wolf shows and Wall Street and Computer Man and DC. We're not for the masses. So, bid you guys a farewell until the next show. Remember 14 words. We must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Carpe noctem. Seize the night. Seize your territorial imperative. Starve the sheep inside you and feed the wolf. And make shield, wall, and wolf heart part of your mental makeup. You have to do it. You need to do it. We need you to do it. That's that.
So do it. Well, there goes Slingblade. Back into the shadows. Back into the alleys. Back into the underworld. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday. We're going to get back into the interesting life of Adolf Hitler. And it's going to make... we're getting into some juicy parts here about the American Jews that were giving Hitler lots of money. I mean, really, lots of money. And stuff like that. So I'll be back with you tomorrow, 14:05, and shut up. And, he mentioned, I've got that book about the doctor who was in Vietnam and did autopsies on all these young Americans that had hardening of the arteries and they weren't even in their 30s yet. He said, chlorine. They started in putting chlorine into our system back in the early part of the last century. Actually, I think it was 1919 or long in there. And it's, interestingly enough, that's when the cancer rate started climbing. So you got to stay away from that chloride, man, or chlorine. If you're swimming in a swimming pool with chlorine, your body's the biggest gland you've got, and you're absorbing that shit. They've got filters for showers to get that chlorine out. But I don't know what you'd do about a swimming pool. I guess you just wouldn't go swimming. I've never been able to afford a swimming pool, so I don't have to worry about it. See you tomorrow.